Twitter on your TV. Jason has some recommendations to replace your burning hot Galaxy Note 7. And Mike Murphy is here to tell us about his ride in a self-driving Uber. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1598, recorded Wednesday, September 14th, 2016.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. So whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/TNT and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's Wealthfront.com/TNT.
And by Zerto, virtual replication and disaster recovery technology that gives you the confidence to keep your business moving forward no matter what comes your way. Zerto empowers you to protect and recover your IT assets, move to the cloud, and know you're ready for anything. Get a free readiness assessment for your data center at confidentcio.com.
And by Gazelle, the online marketplace for buying and selling used gadgets. Shop from a variety of certified pre-owned electronics or trade in one for cash. Give new life to a used device. Visit gazelle.com today. This is Tech News Today, the show where we talk about everything that is important in Tech News Today. And you get to listen to us, the Bart and Lisa of Tech News.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. I'm down with that.
You ready to do your best Bart Simpson today?
Why am I blanking on Bart Simpson? Don't have a cow, man? That's
about all I can think of right now. Yes.
Or calling you dude.
Yeah.
But I don't think either of those work. Yes, I'm ready. Let's do this. Today is the day that Twitter is rolling out its new app for TV viewing. The new apps are hitting Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, and Xbox, and they don't allow users to log in to do things that we're used to doing with Twitter, like tweet, like, or browse their stream. Instead, anyone can use the app to stream content from partners, Bloomberg and the NBA, just as a couple of examples. You can check out content from Periscope and Vine, both properties of Twitter at the moment until Twitter sells them off. And yes, live stream this Thursday's NFL game. That's tomorrow night, a deal that we've been discussing on the show for months now. You don't need a cable subscription authorization, which you sometimes do for things like this. In this case, you don't. So, you know, hey, that's going to bring a lot more like cable cutter eyeballs to it, because cable cutters are always looking for extra content. So I'm eager to check this out. I just don't have any of those devices.
Oh, yeah. So it's not on Roku. That's weird. So, you don't have any. I'll check it out. Yeah. I'll do it for you. Cool. I don't like the football. I actively dislike football, if you want to know the truth. But and apparently the Thursday night games are not the big deal, but I'll do it. I'll watch some.
Okay, good.
I'll watch some.
Watch that sport that it sounds like you really hate.
Yeah.
And tell me how it goes.
Well, we could watch it here too, because we're going to be recording an episode of Know How, and there's an Apple TV here. We could turn on some Thursday night football and see.
It'd be good to get an idea of how it works too and kind of see it. It's HD. It's an HD stream that's going to come through. And actually on the Apple TV, I don't know if it's going to be the same interface on all of the different platforms, but on the Apple TV platform, at least, according to one of these articles, the top tweets related to that video content are going to be shown to the side, kind of in a similar way as we saw in the browser when they were kind of doing their tests with Wimbledon and other things. And I mean, why would Twitter do this if it was just the video and no tweets surfacing along with it? So,
yeah. So this is going to be like a coming out party for them. Mm-hmm. This is a big. They better not screw this up, because I mean, the app just came out. The game is tomorrow. There's going to be, I mean, hopefully a lot of people using it. So I hope it holds up for Twitter's sake.
Twitter has a lot riding on it. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a big kind of transition for them. So, and I mean, starting with the NFL right out of the gate, you know, with this new app that just launched, like that's about as good a strategy as you can get, because mm-hmm. NFL fans are rabid, and cord cutters who are NFL fans are missing this kind of content probably. So this is a great way to get them through the door and get more eyeballs, especially for considering the fact that you don't need an account to use it. So this is going to attract even more attention to Twitter just based on kind of this different angle, you know, new potential users.
It's weird because yesterday we were talking about how YouTube is, they're going to start doing something that's not video. They're going to just be doing something that's more like Twitter. And then, I mean, for Twitter to just go out and say like, oh, we're going to do video, actually. Yeah. It's weird. I don't know. I mean, this is a pivot.
Pivot.
A pivot.
Yes.
Well, reviews of the Apple Watch are in from those who have been blessed with review units by Apple. Lauren Good from The Verge says it's a great fitness tracker, but not worth upgrading to if you just want to use it to have iMessage or Uber on your wrist. TechCrunch says the screen is brighter, and Joanna Stern from The Wall Street Journal says it works great for swimming. She actually did her signature going to go underwater in a wetsuit with my devices with this and the iPhone 7 too. She points out that when you take the watch swimming, the screen is locked so that it doesn't accidentally, none of your apps suddenly go off. And those of us who have been showering with our non-waterproof watches for a year and a half will tell you that water has the ability to open apps, sometimes launch messages, set timers. Sometimes it will accidentally make calls when the water hits it, sort of like butt dialing, but in the shower. So I am looking forward to not having that in the new Apple Watch.
Aren't you not supposed to wear watches that are not waterproof in the shower?
So Tim Cook showers with his Apple Watch. So I shower with my Apple Watch. I have a little, you know, what would Tim Cook do bracelet that I wear.
And if it's good enough for Tim Cook in the shower, then it's good enough for me in the shower.
So, I mean... This is, it's faster. This one is definitely faster. It has a new dual core CPU and a new GPU. The casing is a little bigger, probably due to the larger battery, which I am looking forward to. The aluminum model starts at $369. The stainless steel model starts at $549. And then there's the ceramic model that Leo ordered for me, although he says he ordered it for him. I think
you're getting the ceramic model?
It's $1,249. No, he's getting the ceramic model. But, you know, sometimes he gets tired of things after a few minutes.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hoping for.
Breaths. I mean, I think it's smart to focus, and obviously Apple knows what it's doing here, focus on fitness. It seems like a big, you know, what especially Lauren Good was saying in her kind of walkthrough and review is that this is really good if what you're looking for is an Apple fitness band. Fitness in some ways seems... You know, more than anything in the smart watch wearable category seems to be the killer app if there is one, you know, because I mean, I still feel like wearables are trying to prove themselves. And so I'll be interested to see how well this fares.
Yeah. I mean, for the Apple Watch, and I don't know why this isn't true for everything, like everybody has to have their own killer app. You know, if you don't exercise, probably this isn't for you. I do. I love it. Like, if you don't care to get notifications, this isn't for you. But maybe, you know, there's just like there's the SOS feature. So if you walk a lot by yourself and you want to be notified, you want to be able to have emergency, you know, if you want to buy it for your child or for your aging parent, that might be your killer app. So, yeah, I guess it really depends. But I don't know. I mean, if people need to buy, if they already have one, like, I don't know that you need to buy another one so soon.
Right. Yep. Well, so Apple went to the drawing board, as we're talking about here, and made the Apple Watch an excellent fitness tracker. What does the competition do? If we're talking about LG, Huawei, or Lenovo, apparently what they do is decide not to release any smartwatches in time for the holiday sales season. All three companies have confirmed to CNET they have no plans for a smartwatch release before the end of the year, which kind of goes counter to last year's push, where they were really pushing this heavy. The shift seems to confirm, to some degree at least, that the wearable category might not be as hot, at least with these companies, as it was once expected to be. You know, it's been this, you know, this has been the new big thing for the last however many years, 2-3 years. And this is kind of an interesting signal. Last year at this time, for IFA actually, in Berlin, all three of these companies released, you know, watches, mainly based on Android Wear, but released, you know, iterations on what they had already released so that, you know, they could kind of continue, hopefully, kickstart or kind of move the trend of smartwatches within their company and make sure that they're making, you know, money on this category that is still expected to do well. And here we are a year later, and all three of them are like, yeah, we don't have anything this year. It's okay. And they haven't released anything for a while. So I think that says something.
Yeah, I mean, the CEO of LG said they just want to wait and see what sticks. So that makes sense. I mean, everybody wants to see, well, will this Apple Watch do better? Will it do worse? Who knows? You know, the Asus ZenWatch 3 mm-hmm. looks really nice. I remember we talked about it when they first announced it, but there's no launch date for it. Like, that, I don't know why people wouldn't want to buy that. I mean, it's a nice watch with that activity tracker right on there. But, you know, they haven't even said when we would be able to get that or how much it would cost or anything like that.
Yeah, it's nice. And I mean, that watch in particular, you know, it's the round face, and I definitely prefer personally the round face watches more than the kind of rectangular, which is what it had been the previous two iterations. It's just kind of like at this point, I mean, I've been excited about wearables, at least when they started to kind of launch and started to pick up steam and kind of the notification aspect. I found that pretty valuable for a while. But at a certain point, it just kind of dropped off, and I'm not sure why. Like, I think at a certain point, I still couldn't figure out what the killer app was. If I was really into wearing a wearable and tying it to my fitness, you know, my exercise routine, it's not like I don't exercise every week, but I don't use a wearable and tie it directly into that. I do all that stuff separate from that. So I don't have that killer app. So mm-hmm. there's nothing really pulling me into it. Samsung has, you know, their Gear S3 based on Tizen. They showed that off at IFA. And then, like you say, the Asus watch. But I mean, it's really, the announcements have slowed down. And even just the excitement about any of those watch announcements, at least in the world of Android Wear and Tizen, has really kind of just fallen off a cliff, it seems. So.
Yeah, it does seem like fitness, if you can't push the fitness part of it, people aren't buying.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, rumors of the death of the Echo Dot have been greatly exaggerated. Mm-hmm. The all-new Echo Dot is cheaper, comes in two different colors, and ships October 20th. They cost $50, but if you buy five of them, they'll sell them in a little pack. If you buy five of them, you only pay $41 and something. If you buy 10, you'll only pay $40 for them. So if you, maybe you just started watching the show and haven't heard me go on and on and on about the Echo Dot, but the Echo Dot is a smaller version of the Amazon Echo, which you can talk to, and it will read you the weather, it will read you the news, it will tell you about the movies, it will play music, it will do basically anything that you want in conversation. You basically don't even need to have a family anymore or anything because you have this. Just talking to you. I'm just kidding. Doesn't replace your family. It has replaced me in the homework help at home a few times. But I have the Dot and I like it. The voice recognition isn't as good as the Echo, but I'm not exactly sure if that's a placement problem. We have the Echo in the kitchen and the Dot is in the bedroom and hooks up to our speakers that are a little better. That's the other thing that the Dot does that will, you know, hook up to your good speakers and play music through them.
Well, they've made a lot of changes with this. So they've improved the speech processor. They say that's going to give you better accuracy for using your voice. So that would address that problem for you. They, in order to bring the cost down, they switched from a rotating volume control into like a button press up down volume, kind of more simplified. So it's maybe not as snazzy to use it, I suppose, but still that made it obviously less expensive. It's shorter, it's lighter. They got rid of the 3.5 millimeter audio jack just like Apple did, but I mean,
I've never used that.
So there you go. I guess for outputting audio. Is that how you get audio from the Dot to the stereo?
No, Bluetooth.
That's through Bluetooth.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's different. They have a new ESP. They call it ESP, Echo Spatial Perception. This is a feature that's going to be part of a software update for all Echo owners. So you're going to see this on the one you already have. And that manages multiple Echoes to make sure that if there are many Echoes that are hearing a voice command, it can determine which of those Echoes is picking it up clearest and issue all of those commands through that particular Echo. But there's still no simultaneous playback through all speakers or all Echoes yet. So that's kind of a bummer.
Yeah, that is a bummer. And that's what I think the Home, the Google Home, and that's what a lot of people are saying today. They're like, too little, too late, Amazon. I'm getting the Google Home. And also there's people are saying that in the UK where it just is about to launch in the UK. Yeah. You couldn't get it anywhere in the United States. I mean, anywhere outside of the United States until now. So it's launching in the UK pretty soon. And also the chat room is checking my math. What I meant is you get five and then you pay less for them, or get six. I guess they sell them in six packs. Yeah.
They did this with the Fire Tablet also and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I remember when I got the Fire Tablet with the six pack here at Twit and then promptly never used it really.
Well, we're doing the same thing with the dots. You got to get in on that.
I saw that. But in my head, I was like, I'm going to wait for Google Home.
Yeah. Well, this would make a good Christmas present, I think, or holiday present. I think it's never too soon to think about this. And there's no lithium ion batteries in them either. So, you got that probably.
That's a positive.
Plus, yes. Once you get one, it's just a gateway to buy more stuff. So yeah. If that's your goal in life, then go
that's
for it.
That's certainly Amazon's goal in life. As we've discussed AI on this show many times, one topic that comes up repeatedly is the idea that AI and robots will ultimately take our jobs away from humans. It's not a matter of if, but rather when and at what pace. Forrester released a report last month that predicts 6% of jobs will be taken over by bots by 2021, faster pace than many had anticipated. Forrester says the jobs seeing the biggest impact include those in transportation, as we've talked about, logistics, customer and consumer services, and just kind of points out that voice assistants are already doing a pretty good job understanding what humans need, anticipating needs, deciding for them. Google and Facebook, of course, are building their own AI services, and companies are going to, you know, over the course of the next however many years, tap into that. It's going to accelerate very rapidly and make some pretty significant changes in the workforce.
Yeah, I mean, this is scary. I don't think you can underestimate the potential for just bad stuff happening with this. I mean, yes, it creates, more high-tech jobs, and it'll create more jobs. People will still need to oversee some of this automation. But those jobs are a totally different skill set than what we're talking about, the jobs that we're replacing. And we're going to talk later on the show to Mike Murphy, who wrote in one of the self-driving Ubers today. I mean, if you think about all of the driving jobs that will disappear, I mean, that is a very different skill set than, you know, creating this, this technology or overseeing this technology. So yeah, it's scary. And then, I mean, like you said, there'll be a tipping point sometime after 2021. And then a lot of jobs will be lost, and we can't underestimate the potential for what could happen. I mean, higher rates of unemployment means more crime. It means less people are volunteering, I don't know. I've just depressed myself. Sorry.
I feel like the world's about to end now suddenly. I thought this report was interesting. Now I think it's dire.
Yeah, well, let's look at it this way. We won't have to do these jobs, and we'll just be like sitting back and sitting on the beach, and life will be wonderful because it will be the end of work.
Well, I think one of the things that it has pointed out in some of the stuff I was reading is that like creativity and creative jobs like, similar to kind of what you and I do, like entertainment, let's say, a lot of those are going to be hard for robots to replicate. Mm-hmm. Report says 16% of U.S. jobs, office administrative positions, a lot of those would be prime targets for being replaced. But they'd be supplemented, like you said, with the creation of new jobs, things like monitoring robot professionals. So robot managers over the robots, I guess, data scientists, automation specialists. And I mean, that would all be part of training too, you know? So, I mean, if they were trained in office administrative work, you're right. It's a different skill set, but it's a different skill set based on the way that things just are. And so that's, you know what I mean? I have a feeling it would tap in the same way as it did, you know, creating office and administrative jobs.
Yeah. You keep telling yourself that. Jason.
I'm not working in office or administrative jobs, so thankfully I've got that.
No, I mean, surely the jobs for people who like to take a news story, a study, and use it to cause mass panic, as I've just done, those can never be replaced by a robot. No.
I'm scared. Thanks, Megan.
I've cornered the market on that. So.
All right. We've got a sponsor. Right.
Well, yeah.
I thought it was me.
No. I corner the market on this too.
Okay.
I've been cracking jokes about returning your Galaxy Note 7 and replacing it with an iPhone, but I understand most of you will probably want to replace your Fire Starter with another Android phone, and I don't judge. Jason has a few recommendations for you, but first let's take a minute to thank Wealthfront, the sponsor of this episode. You invest for the long term for you or your family's financial health, and as we said before, it's important to invest now while you still have a job. Trying to do that investing yourself, especially the right way, is complex and time consuming. planning. Luckily, there's Wealthfront. Traditional advisors charge huge fees between 1% and 3% of what they manage. With Wealthfront, you pay 0.25% a year. That's 25 basis points, zero commissions, and no hidden fees. That's less than $5 a month to invest a $30,000 account. There are no additional charges for any of Wealthfront's services. You can get started investing today with as little as $500. Unlike other financial advisors, Wealthfront won't bog you down with dozens of questions. They've simplified the risk identification process, which will allow you to begin investing your money sooner. It only takes a few minutes to sign up. It goes right to work, monitoring your portfolios around the clock, and it takes action as soon as the opportunity arises. Wealthfront portfolios are based on modern portfolio theory. They're designed to adjust according to your personal risk tolerance while staying diversified and tax efficient. Wealthfront is transparent and accessible. You can view and track all your accounts in one place. Wealthfront can track both your Wealthfront and your non-Wealthfront bank and your brokerage accounts that they will provide to you in a summary of all of your assets. You can see every trade that Wealthfront makes on your behalf in your dashboard, on your desktop, or with their mobile app. Wealthfront recently introduced their 529 college savings plans. If you have kids, this is something you could do well to think about now, allowing you to invest after-tax dollars, much like a Roth IRA, and you can save for your child. And if you have grandkids, you can also save for their higher education expenses. Wealthfront manages almost $3 billion in client assets. It's growing rapidly every single day. What are you waiting for? Invest in your future with Wealthfront. Visit wealthfront.com/TNT and sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. You will see then the customized allocation they recommend for your profile. And just for you TWIT listeners, if you sign up to invest, Wealthfront will manage your first $15,000 entirely free of charge for life. Join the many TWIT fans who have seen huge success with Wealthfront and claim your offer today at wealthfront.com/TNT.
All right. So you were all in on the Samsung Galaxy Note 7. And now with all the bad news on faulty batteries, you're wondering what on earth to do now. Obviously, probably the very first thing you should do is contact Samsung, send that sucker back to them for a refund first and foremost. But then what? So, you know, we were kind of talking before the show. Maybe we talk a little bit about options for would-be Note 7 buyers. I mean, you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place, and you know this Note 7 that you've bought. You're going to get your money back if you go through the official process. So you have some options. Right off the top, probably the most obvious option for you is the Galaxy S7 or the S7 Edge, if you want to stay in the Samsung world. And that's just because there are a lot of similarities between the Note 7 and the S7 and the S7 Edge. Obviously, you don't have the S Pen, and that's a pretty big difference. A lot of people on the Note train do so because of that very specific reason. But there aren't a lot of S Pen alternatives in Android, period. So, you might consider otherwise. But otherwise, it's very close in almost every way. Processor, the modems, the camera quality. It has a little bit of smaller screen, but, you know, and it has micro USB as opposed to USB-C, so it's not on the kind of the new connection format. But the good news is you can trade your Note 7 officially through Samsung for the S7 or the S7 Edge and get the difference refunded to you. So that certainly, you know, comes in handy.
What's the difference in between the two, money-wise?
The S7 is $670, I believe. The Edge is $770. And then the Note 7 is right around $850. So, I mean, it can be, you know, pretty considerable, more than $100, depending on which phone you're transferring over to. And, better battery technology. As far as I know, most, you know, not hearing as many issues with these phones as you are with the Note 7. Although I think I did hear of one. But I think also the press is very happy to report anything with an exploding battery right now because it's so high up in the news.
So did they try to push this on you when you said you were returning yours?
No. They left it really open. They didn't tell me about this, and I didn't actually inquire about it because because that was never my intention. My intention was to still get the Note 7, which they basically said, you know, we're sending you the shipping label. We're sending you the box. You just drop it in, send it back to us. Once we get that, we'll give you the refund. And then if you really want it, you can buy it again. So I think maybe possibly it might just be the fact that they're giving you a full refund. And then if you choose to get the S7 or the S7 Edge, you will have been refunded the difference. Mm-hmm. So that's probably what's going on there. Mm-hmm. Then there's the Galaxy Note 5, because actually in poking around a lot online, a lot of people are like, man, I wanted the Note 7. I don't want it anymore because of the whole battery thing, but I still have the Note 5 and it's still just as great. Or the Note 5 is a lot less expensive. You know, you can get it for like
$500 or cheaper, depending on if you're getting it used or reconditioned, you know, a whole lot of options there. But it's very similar in a lot of ways. It has the all glass, all metal design, or all glass and metal design. The display is not rounded like the Note 7 is necessarily, but it looks pretty close on the edges anyways. Micro USB instead of USB-C. There's no micro SD card slot. That's going to turn off some people because with the Note 7, Samsung brought back the SD card slot, and that made a lot of people happy. Not any of that dust and waterproofing, but otherwise pretty much the same. And, you know, if it's a matter of saving yourself like $300-some-odd in the process and still having that S Pen functionality or whatever, if that's really important to you, this is an option.
But don't put the S Pen in backwards.
I can't remember if on the new, I think on the new models, they have protected against that now.
On the Note 7.
And on the Note 5 now.
I can't remember
if they actually tweaked those or not, or if they just have the warning, but I'm pretty sure that they put a single pin or something in there that prevents it from happening.
They've prevented it in the Note 7, yes. But that maybe that's why they blow up. That's not why they blow up. We know that's not why.
But I guess I don't actually know why.
I want to be able to put the pen in any way I want, and I don't want it to blow up. Is that too much to ask?
That's not too much to ask.
Okay.
I think that's actually pretty reasonable. This one, the LG V20, I actually saw this last night on All About Android. Florence Ion was here in studio, and she had one on hand. This was only announced last week at an event, and strangely, we didn't really talk about it on this show, but it is an awesome phone from what I could tell and all the specs. It's coming to market next month, though, and that's the challenge here. So if you're sending back your Note 7, you need a device right away. You're going to have to wait a little bit for this, but it is a beast. It's got a Snapdragon 820 processor, 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigs of storage, micro SD card slot, 5.7-inch QHD display, USB-C. All of those specs are pretty much the same as the Note 7. So a lot of similarities there. It has a second screen up at the very top of the phone where normally there would be bezel, and that gives you like notifications, or you can have shortcut buttons, which I expected to feel super gimmicky, but I actually really liked it. I thought it was really neat. It does have a smaller battery at 3,200 milliamp hours versus the Note 7's 3,500. But, and this is a big but, and I cannot lie, removable battery. So, you know, you can just pop out that battery and swap in another one. No big deal. And, you know, if this battery ever explodes, you can just replace it with something by taking it out.
Yeah. I bet Samsung's really sorry they got rid of the removable battery.
Who knows? Maybe we'll see it come back again. I don't know. I would definitely like to get one for review. And I don't know if we already have one on order to get into the studio here. But I'm going to ask Leo about that before he saunters off onto his vacation. There's also dual rear cameras on this one, but no stylus support and no price at this point. But it's going to be a premium device.
It'll be interesting to compare the dual cameras on the iPhone with the dual cameras.
Yeah, especially because the iPhone is doing the dual cameras as like a zoom functionality, which I think is a great implementation of dual cameras. Here, it's wide angle versus like a less wide camera shot. And so I don't know which is the better alternative. Do I, in real world use, want more access to wide angle camera photography, or is it more useful for me to have a high quality zoom? I almost feel like for myself, high quality zoom would be more useful, but still very curious to see the quality on that. And speaking of iPhone 7, iPhone 7 Plus, I mean, that's an alternative, right? This is just now coming out. It hits stores, obviously, this Friday. Lower resolution display on paper, but the Note 7 actually has a Pentiles technology on the screen, which to some people, and I sometimes see this, sometimes I don't, can make the view just a little bit less crisp, less sharp, based on the way Pentile technology works. The iPhone 7 does not have that, and so, you know, they're saying even though it's less resolution, it's still, will potentially look sharper. Excellent cameras, obviously. iPhone's known for that. They're touting an excellent battery, more improved, you know, even more improved than the previous ones, an additional 1 to 2 hours. Waterproofing, stereo speakers, quality design that iPhone's known for. The big downside for this, obviously, is the shift in ecosystem.
That's a downside?
Well,
just kidding. kidding.
Depending
the
on
shift.
Who you ask,
the
Megan.
Shift itself is a downside.
Well, no. What I mean is, if you are all in on Android and you decide to go to iPhone, you are taking all of those purchases that you've ever made in Android, and you're basically letting a lot of them just kind of, you know, drift off into Never Never Land and having to start over on a new ecosystem. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying the iPhone ecosystem is bad. I'm just saying you're sacrificing a lot of the stuff that you've already done. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get
it. And that kind of sucks because, you know, if I've spent 5 years on Android and then I go to iOS, you're literally starting from square one again. Mm-hmm. And that's a big pill to swallow. But you wouldn't be alone if you chose to do this. CNET poll just had a poll where they asked Note 7 owners, you know, what their plan was. Are they switching? Are they staying? If they're staying, what are they planning on getting? 48.5% of the 3,329 respondents, Note 7 owners, plan to switch to an iPhone. That's a pretty big number based on this poll. I don't know how scientific this is necessarily, but there you go. 30.5% would exchange for another Note 7. And there's a few other kind of bits and pieces here. OnePlus 3 is a great phone. Inexpensive, $400. The Nexus 6P is still, I think, a great phone. It's the one that I use primarily. That's $500 right now. There is an LG Stylus 2 Plus, which is an Android phone by LG that has the stylus kind of capabilities and all that, but it's more a mid-range device, and I kind of tend to see Note buyers in the premium category. So that might be a step down. It's got like a MediaTek processor, which is not nearly as good as the Snapdragons. And then, of course, Google's new Pixel phones, rumored Pixel phones, are right around the corner. So you've got some options. But, I mean, beyond that, there's always just, like, get another Note 7. Like, you can do that. You're going to have to wait just a little bit longer, but the reissues will have better batteries. They're sourced from China's ATL, that's Amperex Technology Limited, and not Samsung's SDI subsidiary, which is the location of the faulty batteries. So if you like the Note 7, I mean, I don't think it's a bad idea to get it again. It's just, I think some people's taste is kind of soured at this point.
Yeah, it probably will be extra safe now.
You would hope. You would expect. I would kind of expect that, right? Yeah. Like once a big recall happens or whatever, you have to expect that they're going to come out and overcorrect on the other side. And
right.
That's what I hope for.
But I feel like you'll have to do a lot of explaining to people, like when you get on planes and when when you're handing it over to a child or
That's true. Like, I wonder if they have to change branding a little bit, because if airplanes, let's say, are not allowing the Note 7 on, but then you get the new Note 7, how do I, as a passenger, tell the plane that this is a new one or that mm-hmm. this is a good one? Sure, on the box it has a blue S on it. Does it have that on the phone? Mm-hmm. Do they know what that blue S means on the phone?
Right.
It's a really interesting question. Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that one, but there you go.
Well, we got a voicemail from Craig. He has a suggestion, which is very appropriate for this conversation, of you just telling everyone that maybe they want to get an iPhone. Let's listen to his voicemail.
Hey, G&T. This is Craig from Tyler, Texas. I just wanted to drop you a line and say, if Jason and Megan are planning to switch phones at some point, switch iOS and Android, maybe it would be fun for y'all to host each other's shows as well. Have Megan host All About Android and have Jason co-host iOS Today with Leo. So just dropping a suggestion. I've enjoyed getting back into TNT after being gone a couple of years.
It's good to be back.
Keep up the good work.
Excellent. Thanks, Craig. We've talked a little bit about that. And I think the jury's still out on that, how we would pull that off. I mean... I think it would make sense to have you on All About Android with the you know, kind of perspective of what it was like, and mm-hmm. well, and if you really wanted me on iOS Today, I could do that with Android with the Android perspective as well. But
well, no, I want you to host iOS Today, and then you'll go on Android. You guys have a lot of fun here. Whenever I'm leaving on Tuesday night, I'm like, that's where the magic happens.
It's true.
We do
have a lot of fun.
Yeah, no, we'll consider that. You also do an extra show, so I don't know if I'm willing to.
Yeah, are you going to pick up all my shows?
Yeah.
This is actually a really good idea. Yeah. I like this idea. A lot.
We'll see. I know we've been, you know, teasing this for a long time. Yeah, it will happen. We'll, we just have to get the right phones into our hands.
That's right. And spend the right amount of time with the phones that mm-hmm. It's our job to spend before we do the switch, and suddenly that isn't our phone anymore for however long we choose to do it.
We're afraid. Let's admit it. We're scared.
A little bit. But we're going to do it, by golly. Like, we're dedicated to this. Up next, self-driving Ubers are here. They're here. And we'll chat with Mike Murphy from Quartz about what it's like to ride in one. But first, let's take a minute to thank Zerto, the sponsor of this episode. Zerto is IT asset protection, disaster recovery, cloud continuity, all for confident CIOs. Confidence can make or break businesses in today's IT world. It can mean the difference between hesitation and action, success or irrelevance. You don't want irrelevance. Zerto's cloud-based business continuity solutions arms today's CIOs and IT pros with the confidence to know their systems are ready for anything. With Zerto, you can recover from downtime, test new technology, and move to the cloud in a matter of clicks while maintaining business continuity. Zerto's virtual replication technology gives you the power to simplify your migrations. You can switch to new infrastructure faster, get quicker ROI, all in a matter of clicks. You'll know your data is protected because it's breakthrough hypervisor-based software that's being put into place here. It puts the power of continuous replication at your fingertips. You can migrate to the cloud with no disruptions with enterprise-class software that empowers you to seamlessly and safely move virtualized workloads between public, private, and hybrid clouds. You'll get complete comprehensive data protection in one smart solution for BCDR across storage and hypervisors. You can recover from any disruption with checkpoints every few seconds. You can protect and recover files, virtual machines, and applications from any point in time. So you want to see for yourself how Zerto simplifies your data replication and disaster recovery. Plus, you'll get a free readiness assessment for your data center if you go to confidentcio.com. That's confidentcio.com. And we thank Zerto for their support.
Today was a big day in Pittsburgh. Uber invited a passel of journalists to ride in its self-driving Ford Fusions. Mike Murphy from Quartz was there, and he's joining us to chat about his ride. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, Megan. How's it going?
Good. So did the robot car drive you around in ludicrous mode?
I mean, it was kind of ludicrous. It drives in a really weird, but I guess very efficient way. So I wouldn't call it like ludicrous like a Tesla, but ludicrous in a lot of other ways.
So talk a little bit about what Uber's program in Pittsburgh is all about.
So as of today, exactly 4 self-driving cars are going to be on the road for like 3 or 4 hours every day in Pittsburgh. And a select group of Uber riders in Pittsburgh, which is going to be about 1,000 people, like VIPs, will have access to call a self-driving car, and they won't know when they request an Uber whether it's going to be a human or a self-driving car until the ride's accepted. But yeah, basically a few cars are going to be autonomously picking up passengers around Pittsburgh, taking them to areas that the cars have mapped very well, which includes the Strip District, which is where Uber's headquarters is right now, where I'm driving in this video, which, as you can tell, not a lot of people live. Parts of the downtown, kind of where the stadiums are, that sort of thing. They have at least 15 of these cars. They wouldn't tell us exactly how many they have, but I counted 15. There's a lot of them. And based on demand, they're going to roll out more cars. But yeah, 4 are on the road as of today. And they're going to be like basically doing the morning rush.
And you say there's 1,000 potential riders, passengers. Do those riders know all about this going in? If there's no indication in the app whether they're going to get a self-driving vehicle or not, like, have they been prepped ahead of time to say, hey, you've been selected to potentially ride in these self-driving vehicles?
Yeah, so it's like a hard opt-in process where Uber will self-select, 1,000 of what it considers, its biggest customers, and they'll have to agree that at some points when they select an Uber X, I like that it's Uber X as well, not like Uber Black or Uber Premium or Uber Select. It's literally Uber X that these self-driving cars are. But when they select one of those, there'll be a chance that it'll be a self-driving car, and basically, like, we did the whole thing. Like, we even requested the car. And the only real indication you have is that instead of saying, like, Ford Fusion or whatever, it says, self-driving Uber. So that's the only indication once you've accepted your ride. And you obviously can cancel it if you don't feel like being driven around by a jerky robot. But that's it, really.
So as we saw in the video, you were behind the wheel. So these Ford Fusions still have wheels. They still have driver's seats. And we assume that you are not a robot. So these Ubers are going to have...
We don't know, though.
We don't know. Jury's still out. But we assume that that there'll be people. Like, explain who those people are going to be in each of the self-driving Ubers.
Sure. So, they let us... they let me and a few of the other people sit behind the wheel, but the average customer won't be allowed to do that. So in every ride, there'll be two Uber employees, one at the steering wheel, who's basically like a test driver. So he'll have his hands kind of loosely gripping the wheel, basically barely touching it. The guy had his hands like this the whole time under the wheel. And the idea being that he can take control. If you move the wheel, it rests control from the computer back to the person. If you put your foot on the gas, foot on the brake, or if you press this giant red stop button next to you, you take control from the computer. So that'll be that guy's job. And then to his right, there's a guy with a laptop that's basically seeing everything the car is seeing, logging all the information, sending that back to Uber's lab, and also kind of flagging any sort of interesting incidents that happen along the way that maybe other cars might benefit from knowing.
Well, you also wrote that there was some trouble. The car had a little bit of trouble with stoplights. Can you tell us about that?
Car had a little bit of trouble with a lot of stuff. But it one of the things that was most disconcerting to me was, and Allison Griswold, my co-pilot who covers Uber for us, who was with me in the car, she actually noticed this first, that when the car approached a stoplight, whether it was, you know, whatever color it was, a traffic light, it kind of hesitated and slowed down. It could be a green light, yellow light, red light. It always slowed down and then kind of realized, oh, it's a green light, I can go. And it did this other thing where basically it always went exactly the speed limit. So if it was going from one road that was 25 miles an hour to another road that was 35, it would automatically speed up as fast as it could to 35 miles an hour, which is a super weird feeling. So what would happen at the stoplight, if it was green and it kind of realized, oh, I can still go, it would like speed back up right away. And if the light changed, it was super awkward. Then the car just stopped. So it kind of felt like a, you know, I've heard other people say it was like a student driver. I didn't drive like that when I was a student, but it was definitely like really tentative. Like it would go around corners in the same way that like, you know, an 85-year-old who probably still shouldn't be driving will like creep around the corner like, I don't know if I can go. And it was a little nerve-wracking, but it was also super weird how quickly I forgot that, like when I was sitting in the driver's seat, like how quickly I forgot I'm behind the wheel of a car.
Yeah, that was one of my questions to you, having the experience of being behind not just a vehicle that is going straight on the freeway and, you know, you can let go and let it do its thing, but it's navigating around in this case. So it's kind of a step beyond. You're sitting in the passenger seat. You're supposed to be super attentive. Is it pretty easy to kind of forget that when you're sitting there and be distracted and not be as attentive as you need to be?
I mean, I have to say one of the things that I was really impressed with was the engineer's ability to like hold a conversation with me, but also like keep his eye on the road. I kind of, not immediately, but like there were a bunch of situations where I was talking to him and kind of looking this way or, you know, gesticulating. And, you know, he would look up and go, and I just put your hands on your wheel or be prepared to brake. And it was really easy to forget. Like I'm behind the wheel of a car.
Right.
Like, I've been in situations where I'm in the passenger seat in a car and someone else is driving and I'll like, you know, instinctively put my foot out to brake, even though I'm not driving. And I definitely did that at first in this, but it was kind of crazy really how quickly I forgot.
Ed in our chat room wants to know, did you encounter any pedestrians on the ride?
Yeah, we did. So every time there was like a normal crosswalk, the car did exactly what it was supposed to. And this was like totally by chance. We didn't plan this, but Allie and I stayed at an Airbnb that was literally on the self-driving Uber route. So when we were walking to our like time slot, there were cars going by already. And I took a little video. I don't think it made it into the main video of, because I was like really interested to see what would happen. There was like a school group crossing of like literally like 50 kids crossing a small crosswalk. And like they took longer than the light would take. And I was really interested to see like with the Uber, like it, obviously it wasn't going to run the kids over. Like you'd hope they've tested it that much. But like I was like, really, is it going to do this like weird, awkward, like, can I go sort of thing. But it was very patient. And it waited until everyone across the road. In terms of like people jumping out on the road and anything like that, we didn't encounter anybody. But I asked the engineers, have they been in that situation? Has anyone like actively tried to be a jerk to see what would happen? And they said, yeah, we've seen everything. And considering I haven't heard about anyone a self-driving car killing anyone yet, I guess so far it's managed to stop in time.
Yeah, I mean, when you say that, it's like, oh, that's the next thing that, you know, we're going to hear about at some point. Hopefully not, but
yeah, people messing with them. Also, people who, you know, maybe if they own these self-driving cars, getting in there and tweaking, let's say, the algorithms that determine how safe or how cautious it is, and like ramping it up, because you're telling me this. I'm like, okay, well, some drivers would stop for a group of people to cross the road. They wouldn't necessarily wait for the last person to be completely out of the car, the crosswalk. They'd wait for them to be mostly out of the crosswalk, and then they'd realize, I'm a human being. I'm in a big hurry. I'm just going to go. You know, I'm sure people are going to get in there and mess with these and tweak them in that way.
Well, it's super worrying because, so we actually, Allie and I wrote another story that also went up today, and we spoke to local officials, the mayor, I spoke to some CMU professors, and, you know, there's this kind of issue of, like, this isn't just, like, a software problem. Like, you're not going to be able to code your way out of this. Like, there's still a car involved, and, like, there's a bunch of regulations that really need to be really, really, really codified before this is something that should be happening everywhere. And one of the things we flat out asked Uber is, you know, do you have an ethics board like Google does now for AI? Like, you have real cars on the road that are in real public roads that could really hit somebody. What's your, you know, what is your answer to the trolley problem in this situation? And they kind of just laughed. And we asked them, who is liable if a self-driving car hits someone? And they refused to comment because they said, we don't deal in theoreticals. But, you know, I think it was the Allegheny County, which is the county Pittsburgh's in, council member told colleague Allie, like, that's disconcerting that they're not having that conversation publicly. Like, they obviously don't have to tell us what's going to happen in every situation, but these are the sorts of conversations that if we're really going to have these on the road across the country that we need to be having, because these are robots that we're entrusting. Like, yes, it's fine and great that these might be safer than car or than, you know, human drivers, but like, they will still kill people, and we need to have answers for that. And it's very disconcerting to me. And this was in the second story we wrote today, like, that Uber didn't have answers for these questions.
Yeah, that's really disconcerting. I mean, they laughed. That is, you'd think they would have an answer for that problem, because that's the first thing everyone asks, like, what about the trolley problem, which is such a rare problem. But you're right, it is a problem, and they should have an answer for it. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for doing this reporting. Mike Murphy is a reporter at Quartz. He is at MCWM on Twitter and QZ.com to read all of his work, including both of these stories he talked about. Thanks so much, Mike.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks for having me.
Have a good night. All right, TNT's fan of the day is Arthur Sykov, A. Sykov on Twitter, who says, modern tech news should be listened in modern tech cars. And here we are showing off his Tesla, obviously. Uh-huh. He says in his bio he's a proud Tesla owner. Fine, you got a Tesla. We're working on it. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. Post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, Facebook, any social network you can think of that we'll actually check. Use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we'll find it.
There should be a social network just for Tesla owners, don't you think?
Maybe they're working on it. And and you can only use it in the Tesla interface.
Right.
That sounds super safe.
Well, so you want an iPhone 7? Get in line. No, I mean, really, you need to get in line. One is already forming outside at least one Apple store. We'll tell you more about that after the break. But first, let's take a minute to thank Gazelle, the sponsor of this episode. Some people like to wait in line at Apple stores. If you're one of them, why not trade in your device for cash before you go wait in that line? If you're not one of them, then trade in your old device and buy a certified pre-owned iPhone without ever leaving your house. For trade-in, simply visit gazelle.com, find your device, and get an instant quote. Shipping is free and payment is fast. If you're looking to buy a certified pre-owned device, Gazelle has a variety of iPhones, including the iPhone 6S and the iPhone 6S Plus. They have iPads, they have Samsung Galaxy phones, all of that and more to choose from. Each device is fully inspected, backed by a 30-day return policy, and sold without a carrier contract. Go to gazelle.com, see what your device is worth, and check out the selection of certified pre-owned devices today. Gazelle is now providing financing on all devices by Affirm. All you have to do is provide your basic information, then you get instantly approved and pay off in 3, 6, or 12 months. Easy monthly payments can be made through your bank, check, or a debit card. Just select financing with Affirm at checkout. Devices are available in good and excellent conditions. Good conditions show some gentle signs of wear and tear, but offer consumers great prices on still great devices. All devices have been put through a rigorous 30-point inspection process, ensuring that they are in perfect working order. Give new life to your used electronics. Trade in for cash or buy certified pre-owned. Visit gazelle.com today. Mac Rumors says the lines are already forming for the iPhone 7 outside the Apple store. Yes, you heard that right, and I'm not making that up. You will not be able to actually buy the phone for at least 36 hours. People have allegedly been waiting in line for days outside the Fifth Avenue Apple store in New York with folding chairs and even tents. CNET also pointed us to a tweet claiming that you could pay a mere $300 for the 13th spot and the chair. I don't know if you get to keep the chair. That was not included in the tweet. The first person that got there on August 25th. I'm a fan, but this is jet black nonsense.
This is madness. And yet it happens every single year. The difference, though, this time, 9to5 Mac actually reports that most Apple stores are going to have little to no walk-in stock this time around. It's all reserved for people who pre-ordered online, also all reserved for people who are members of the iPhone upgrade program, because that's been criticized for not having enough stock. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, these people, I mean, maybe they're waiting in line for those reservation spots, but you've got a reservation spot. I think they're waiting in line because they think they're going to get a device, and maybe a couple of them will. Maybe none of them will, based on what we're hearing through these reports.
Maybe they're waiting in line so that we talk about them and take pictures of them and that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if you're in line for 72 hours in this ritual of getting in line to get an iPhone prior, especially if you're at the front of the line, you know there's going to be coverage of it. Like, yes, it's definitely got to be about attention. It's also got to be about, I won't be the first to have this phone.
Yeah.
Because why? Because it's cool, one. And two, I have it and you don't. Mm-hmm.
That's why the jet black, So I don't know. Yeah, it's nonsense.
It is nonsense. Jet black nonsense. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 11 p.m. UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be a part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. You can leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter. We're at TechNewsTodayTV.
Subscribe to the show so you get it first. You can find all the ways to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, Kara. Thanks to Matt for scrolling the words on the screen. Thanks to Kevin for editing and making us look good, hopefully. Don't make us look bad, please, Kevin. Come on. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everyone. Ow.